We can do some kind of things on an upper level, all the CSI TV shows and all that stuff that are real popular. They get into kind of these explanations and why, and the evidence just looks so one way, but then it turns out to be the other way, and all that kind of stuff. But we're talking about on a level that gets down to the deepest possible answer. And then God is the necessary precondition for all intelligible, which means meaningful, human experience. Apart from God, we're just sort of existing. We don't have good answers. That's what we read in Ecclesiastes 13:10 or 10:13, that in the end is wicked madness. That this is how cultures become murderous, is that they start following a train of thought and philosophy. There's a good video on the philosophers and the rise of the Third Reich. There's a direct connection between what was being taught philosophically and the growth of the Nazi Party. There were some very heavyweight philosophers backing it. Some for a little while, some for the whole, they saw that. And if you have the schedule one, I'll get some more for anybody, for next week. Anybody doesn't have it, on the back is an opening introduction. And I'm just going to read a little bit. Yep. In 1881, Friedrich Nietzsche asserted in his book Daybreak that God is dead. Have you ever heard that? Mm-hmm. Oh, video, movie, series based on that. This is where it came from. God is dead. This became the rallying cry for the generations of atheists that followed. The big question is, what did this industrial strength atheist mean by God is dead? He meant that the era of God as a cultural influence was over. Christendom was dead. He didn't believe God existed anyway. And by part of his background, he was raised, his father was a Lutheran minister, a high Calvinist, and died when Nietzsche was 5 years old. And he never recovered. Because in Calvinism, it's thought that's part of God's plan. And he got soured into hatred towards God. Most atheists are really anti-theists, as kind of portrayed in the first God's Not Dead video. They're anti-theists. They know. But they hate him. Mm-hmm. Which is what Jesus also said in John 3. They hate the light. They love the darkness. So, God was no longer relevant. He thought an entirely new culture was in order, completely devoid of any Christian influence. He kind of liked ancient Greek society. A complete revision of Western culture. He also thought that whatever human lives need to be sacrificed to further evolutionary advancement of the human race was a good thing. Life is war, he said. He was also very strong Darwinist. And he was really the first. He's like in the top three of philosophers that have affected the modern world. And he put forth the first strongly philosophical evolutionary case of why things should be a certain way. And war was necessary. Now, since Nietzsche, more people have died in war in the last 100 years than in pretty much the last 1900 years. Because it's going to further the evolutionary process. The communist, Marxist, socialist, all of them. By the way, one of the architects of the Bolshevik Revolution said, socialism is atheism and atheism is socialism. So we hear this growing. There is now a sufficient atheistic base that now allows socialism to be possible.
But interestingly enough, in Russia, you know, they didn't like Darwinism. they loved punctuated equilibrium where you have these, you know, sudden jumps in evolution because that fit their image better than slow, steady progress, you know. And so they had their own specialized brand of evolution.
That sort of mutated later on.
Yeah.
But Marx and Darwin were pen pals.
Right. Right.
And Marx had no foundation for his Marxism, which communism and socialism are adopted siblings of Marxism. Because socialism is the step to communism. The ultimate communist man is never takes more than what he needs and is always willing to share what he has. But right now, people are greedy and eat too much fat, and we have to be controlled because we might buy guns. And, you know, all of this kind of stuff is about, since there is no God, this is the starting point, instead of this being the starting point. Since there is no God, the state is the only thing that can bring order out of the chaos. And that's why we have every kind of government agency to regulate every facet of American life now. That is all socialism, total control, until that glorious day when evolution carries man.
That's not the worst thing I'm
thinking of. Yeah, I don't know. Marx in his early years was in Bible college. So he had a theological understanding, and his language, Marxism offered the world a full-blown alternative to Christianity. And his language is very much religious. And at some point in his career, he just stopped writing and spent the rest of his days in seclusion. Well, he stopped publishing. He wrote until he died. Mastered like 20 languages and stuff like that. But it never went anywhere. He just stopped because I think it's been suggested that the realization that his whole system doesn't work dawned on him, and so he just stopped. Didn't publish anything else. But he still talked about the progress, the evolutionary progress. And then Nietzsche followed him and said that the fastest way for evolution is war. And we've been dealing with that ever since. And the biggest impediment to that is right here. So you hear people say, all this stuff is apologetic moments. You hear somebody say that Christianity is the biggest impediment to world peace there is. So I answer that. You have to get back to here. And this is where the four spiritual laws of evangelism doesn't work anymore. We're dealing with a generation that is very sophisticated. They have been trained to think atheistically. They may profess to believe in God. They may have some Bible knowledge. But they think in a way that is ungodly. Not in the sense they're evil, but God's just not a part of it. And it's in the church. Millions of years in the church is one of the signs of that.
Exactly.
And I'll get into talking about ultimate authorities maybe next time. Because to have millions, every person I've ever talked to that believes in millions of years brings that to Scripture. They don't start with Scripture and come out of it.
Right.
They bring it into Scripture and try to find a way to justify. And this has been kind of normal way of business throughout church history. And that's where good theology, good philosophy, good science work together to throw water on that fire. Because right now it's spreading. It's getting worse. It's not getting better. So, and then finally, I said preconditions for intelligibility, a big word. It means you have to have certain resources for something to be meaningful. So if I said, what kind of mental resources do you have to comprehend what this is saying? at a certain level, it's like it's instinctual throughout the world. But to have to put that up there, what is addition? We know two is two things, and we got four things on the end, and equality, what's that? But what if I put this one up here? You have to now have another level of resources to comprehend what this is saying. And so the preconditions for intelligibility means you have certain things. Have you ever talked to somebody that has zero biblical knowledge? It's a whole other world. We're mostly geared to four spiritual laws of evangelism, which assumes that people have a basic understanding of stuff.
Right.
Who's Noah? I'm talking about Noah's flood one day, and this kid goes, "Who's Noah?" Or talking to a girl online last night, she goes, "Why do people call Jesus Lord? Why do people say Jesus is God?" And she was very sincere. She had no idea. Biblically illiterate at a level that is just foreign to most of us. And that is the difference between Peter's Acts 2 message and Paul's Acts 17 message.
Right.
Peter was talking to a people who had the resources. Most of them heard about Jesus. Most of them heard he was doing miracles. Most of them heard all kinds of stuff. They had a basic knowledge of Jesus, which Peter could then build on. When Paul goes to Athens, they freak out when he mentions resurrection of the dead. That just, because in Greek society, you're trying to escape life. Life is horrible, and the sooner we can get out of here, but suicide was not really acceptable. Unless you're Socrates. By the way, that court that they took, Mars Hill, Areopagus, it was a philosophical court. And Socrates was sentenced, convicted of heresy in that court, and offered two ways out. We'll kill you, or you can go kill yourself. So he drank the cup. Because the stuff, the philosophy that he was espousing was just so contrary to the established doctrine of the day. And that's where they took Paul. He was on trial for philosophical heresy by teaching Jesus and the resurrection. They thought he was talking about two gods. There's this God named Jesus, and there's this other God named resurrection. It was blowing their mind. So they, when he finally talked about, and they understood that God, who created everything, that doesn't need anything, proved who he's going to judge the world by raising Jesus from the dead. They got that. And it's, no, stop. They couldn't convict him for heresy, but they put it in, but some listened. So, the different part of knowing your audience, do they have, if you, can you back down your evangelism to a level to somebody who has no clue what you're talking about? That takes time. And that's kind of where we're at. We are now addressing a pagan culture. Can somebody give me a 2-minute warning, please? So there's these conclusions. What students see in textbook are these conclusions. They never, and may be a simple argument. There's a book called, it's on Darwinism. It's this writer who, Myths of Darwinism. This writer, not a Christian, daughter came home one day, Daddy, guess what we learned in school today? And being an investigator, said, okay, let's see if we can verify that. And he couldn't. And again, and again, and again, and again, he wrote a whole book. And he thought he could have a rational discussion with people over what he had found. And his attack was so horrendous, he called them howler monkeys. People who defend their turf by screaming and throwing excrement.
because that's how the howler monkeys defend their territory.
But there isn't. That's why they use the courts to keep anything against Darwin out of schools. Because we cannot allow him here for the rest of our years. The truth, God's universe is such that the truth always comes to the surface. Mm-hmm. No matter how difficult, and that word in Romans 1 is to they suppress the truth. And no matter where you go in the earth, suppression of evidence is considered a crime. And so even in drug courts, suppression of evidence is a bad thing. So now there's a sort to another level here. So well, I'll just go here. Try to get the big picture in. What happens when these two are merged together? And God took the dust of the ground and breathed into him the breath of life, and man became a living soul. That's why we have these things, because he breathed into us the breath of life. And then even further, 1 Thessalonians, this is the Spirit. The spirit of man is the candle of the Lord. For most people, that candle's out. They're spiritually dead. They cannot receive the things of God. And so, don't confuse this with the idea of pantheism. God and his creation and our kind of, you know, God is everything, everything is God. This is what God has made us. He has infused himself into us. Every human being at creation. So from the very beginning, we've had the ability to see these kinds of things. That we can even do those now. They're part of what he has built into us. And on the more atheistic side is the human potential movement. Because they recognize that human beings are capable of amazing things. Special forces can get special training to go out into tap that spirit to stop their heart and not die. To pretend to be dead. I watched a show on martial arts one time, and they brought in some physicists. They wanted to find out when a human fist hits blocks of cinder blocks or wood, how much force is actually being exerted. Because they found out it takes 70 pounds of force to break bones. So they said, well, let's see. And so they put pressure sensors and everything, and got it all rigged up, and they found out that when that fist hits that wood or those cinder blocks, they're hitting it with 700 pounds of force. So where is that other 630 pounds coming from? It's coming from right here. And this is probably kind of foreign, but like I said, my starting was in the occult world. I started learning things. And before I ever even heard, I knew the seat of the spirit is here. This is what was called the heart. It's not the cardia,
yeah,
but it's
like
here.
Yeah.
And if you've ever driven by an accident and seen blood and mess, and where do you feel it?
Right.
Yeah. So Jesus was moved with bowels of compassion. He felt it in his spirit, which is right here. You feel it here. And every one of you has probably experienced that. There's something either traumatic or glorious, but you feel it here. And the very literal word for the bowels, King James uses that, I think, more than any other translation. It's the word we get the word spleen from. I can't pronounce it. It's like